Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Backstep, where we talk about safety, survival, and other things. Welcome to the Backstep.
Welcome to the Backstep, everybody. Like the man said, this is Ronnie K. I got Tommy A. on the line. Tommy, how you doing, buddy?
Good, brother. How you doing?
Not too bad. Finally cleared up here in New England. We had a beautiful 70-degree sunny day today for Memorial Day. It was about time. It rained the last three, so we're doing better. What's going on out in your neck of the woods there in Colorado?
Actually, it's been a gorgeous Memorial Day weekend. For those who live in wildland fire world, our Haynes Index has been running about a 6 high, which you understand the fire behavior ramifications of that. Right. And hopefully we'll get a little bit of rain and it'll calm things down a little bit.
One can only hope. Well, like we've been doing the last couple of shows, Tommy, we surely don't mind, but we need to pay homage to our sponsor. You know, they were great. You know, went down to see the Granger guys at FDIC, and they single-handedly are sponsoring us. I stopped by to see them and thanked them wholeheartedly. So, guys and gals, listen up. Let's take 30 seconds and a word from our sponsor, Granger.
With an industry-leading distribution network, Granger can save you tons of downtime by offering over 900,000 products, many ready to ship right when you need them. In fact, 99% of items ordered ship same day. So fast, the International Acronym Committee is considering changing ASAP to ASAG, or as soon as Granger. At least they would be considering it if there were such a committee. To help keep your business running efficiently, call clickgranger.com or stop by a branch today. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, there you go. The ones who get it done, and they're getting it done. They're getting it done for us, huh, Tom?
Yeah, in fact, I also made the journey to go stop and see him at the booth at the show at FDIC, just to thank him for hosting the everybody's show here, doing a great job with keeping us alive.
Yeah, absolutely. Last time we were together, we broadcasted live from FDIC, and that was a whole lot of fun, right? We haven't had a show since, right? Am I right?
Oh, that was the last time we were up, and I got to tell you, that was a real kick, even though. You know, we're giving Fire Engineering a hard time for being so cheap about not getting us a booth. They at least put us in a room, and it was great. We had a room full of folks and had a great time.
Yeah, and it was, and for the guys that are listening tonight, or if you're listening on the rebound tomorrow on the tape, that's really the first time Tommy and I ever actually sat in the same room and did the show together. As you know, I'm in Connecticut, Tommy's in Colorado, and even though the both states start with the letter C, they're very far apart. For you non-geographic guys out there. But it was fun. We had eight or six guys stop up. We gave away some Backstep Boys T-shirts that we had made specially for the occasion, and it was kind of neat. So that was a lot of fun. And of course, while we're just briefly talking about FDIC, a couple of quick items. The technical editor of Fire Engineering Magazine, Glenn Corbett, received the Tom Brennan Lifetime Achievement Award. The George D. Post Instructor of the Year, sponsored by the ISFSI, went to a good friend of ours, Mark Emery. Mark is on our board of directors for the National Fire Academy Alumni Association, where Tom and I do some work. And he's out in Region 10, and we certainly congratulate him for that. And a young man named Bill O'Connor, I believe it was Bill. Was it Bill? The fireman from Stanford. Do you remember? Forget, we'll just say O'Connor. How's that? Firefighter O'Connor from Stanford, Connecticut, got the Ray Downey Medal of Valor this year. And a real nice guy, real nice family. Came with his wife and two sons and another lieutenant. And we congratulate him as well. Job well done. So, yeah, FDIC was pretty cool this year. You know, the usual suspects, you know, like Tommy, as you know, I call it a family reunion. And certainly for us, and when I say us, I mean the fire service, it's really, for 1 week, it's the center of the universe, you know. Well, a good time was had by you all, and a lot of learning going on, too, you know.
It was, as always, a very rewarding experience to be in the fine city of Indianapolis once again.
Yeah, and you know what? When I say we couldn't do it, I mean none of us. The fire engineering, the staff, everything that goes on at that conference, without the Indianapolis Fire Department, it's almost impossible. I worked staff for 7 years, as you know, Tom. We couldn't do it without them. So once again, we a collective tip of the helmet to the guys out in Indianapolis for doing a great job. I guess first thing on the list for tonight, guys and gals, of course, today's Memorial Day, where we honor our military people who made the ultimate sacrifice. We also think about our firefighters who have made the ultimate sacrifice. So I think tonight we're going to dedicate our show to the military and the uniformed personnel at home, police, fire, EMS, that have made the ultimate sacrifice over the years and have laid the foundation for us to go ahead and keep going and all that other stuff. So tonight's show is dedicated to all our veterans. If you're a veteran out there, thank you for your service. Thank you for keeping us safe, keeping us free. You know, and the old saying we say in the firehouse, you guys fight the wars abroad and we fight the war at home, you know, at the same time. So we're kind of all in this together. So thank you, veterans. A couple of people come to mind. My dear father-in-law, who's departed now, he was a field medic in World War II during Battle of the Bulge.
Wow.
Yeah, if any of you guys have ever seen Band of Brothers, there's one whole episode where the Easy Company's locked in and they're getting their asses kicked. It's in the middle of the winter. They're in the snow and in the Battle of the Bulge, and it's right outside. I can't think of the name of the city, the French city, but they're getting there, and they're laying there. And the medic is running all over the place, and he's big borrowing, stealing morphine for the guys. And my father-in-law did that, and just my hat always went off to him for doing that kind of work under those conditions, and just a whole bunch of other guys. My good friend Ray, who's out in New Jersey, Vietnam vet. Great guy. He was my deputy in my last job, and Ray and I worked together Memorial weekend. Tommy, I know you met Ray last year. He's my deputy operations officer.
Great guy.
Yeah, great guy. They don't come better than that then. So hats off to my friend Ray, and I'm probably missing a couple other people. But for all the veterans out there, thanks for what you did. And the current guys, thanks for what you do. And we're going to dedicate tonight's show to all the Memorial Day, to all things that are Memorial Day here in this great country we live in. So,
I got to, send my accolades not only out to the vets, but to Staff Sergeant Douglas Arnhammer, USMC, who I lived under the threat of being thrown into a duffel bag and taken off to Paris Island every time I screwed up. Doug, you may be gone, but I miss you dearly.
Now, who was that, Tom?
My dad.
Oh, that was your dad. Okay. That was your dad. Oh, cool. So your dad was a Marine?
Oh, every day.
Every day, huh?
And then
even after he retired?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, how about
that? You know, it's kind of funny. He went in when he was 17 and got to serve at the end of World War II, and then was active reserve and got called back up during the Korean War. But he decided to take advantage of his GI Bill when he got out, and packed up his new bride, my mom, and went to Idaho to get a degree in forestry.
Uh-huh.
And he ended up spending 30 years as a cop in New Jersey.
Go figure.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess life's little whatevers kind of dictate which road we take. But he was a great outdoorsman. Loved the fish, but... you know, when they started having kids, the decision was to, I guess, stick in the job.
I hear you. Well, you know, no matter what plan you have, Tommy, you or I or any of the guys listening, if you want to make God laugh, show him your plan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
God's got a great sense of humor. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I also got to mention, I found out today we lost another one of the fire service good guys. And, Ron, I don't know whether you're ever familiar with George Goldbach.
The name sounds familiar, George Goldbach. Where's he from?
He was retired out of FDNY, but spent probably over 20 years out here in Colorado. Huh. He was chief of the West Metro Fire District out in just outside the Front Range in Lakeview, Colorado. Did
that
a tremendous amount of stuff there. Was a program chair with Red Rocks College, ran the South Metro Fire Training Academy. was on the Evergreen Rescue Board.
Is that where Mike West works?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We lost him day before yesterday. And George was a tremendous influence on a lot of people here in Colorado. A great mentor, a great instructor. George taught out at the FDIC for a couple of years. An all-around great guy. And
I remember the name, Tommy.
Had a
very
career with the FDNY. Worked Ladder 102, Engine Company 222, Squad 4, and actually worked for the Training Bureau for a while. Just a wonderful human being, and I know he's going to be missed tremendously.
I the name sounds familiar, but I don't know if I ever met the man. But if you say he was good, he was good. Your word's good for me. You know that, right? So
yes, I know.
Hats off to George Goldbach, and rest in peace, brother, and till we meet again. You know what I'm saying?
The other thing is, our last actual show where we were doing the show itself was back on April 15th. I know because it's the day I had to painfully part with a bunch of money to send to our federal government. But we've had, at last count, 14 line of duty deaths since you and I were last together on the 15th, Ron.
Eesh.
Five in West Texas, which I do want to talk about a little bit more in depth as we go along. Rodney Miller from Loganville, PA, was struck by a vehicle. Dale Queen from Hartselle, Alabama, from stress overexertion. Gene Kirshner, Townsend, Maryland, trying to perform a rescue with a structure fire. Daniel Davidson from Clabcroft, New Mexico, passed from an unknown medical. Stanley Martin Jr. from Utah, Alabama, stress overexertion. Brian Weechy from Westland, Michigan, died in a roof collapse at a structure fire. Albert Ninja, Tacoma, Washington, stress and overexertion at an EMS call. Brad Harper, Phoenix Fire Department, Phoenix, Arizona, got caught between two vehicles on an emergency incident. And Stanley Wilson from Dallas, Texas, who died in a building collapse at a structure fire. May they all rest in peace, and please pray for their families.
Yep. Of course, our hats are off to these guys and their families. And for the guys that are listening, understand that stress and overexertion, that's the category that they put on when a guy has a heart attack or a stroke. Okay, so we're still proportionally losing more guys to heart attack and stroke. One or two of those in the last 3 or 4 months were in their 20s. So we can assume that there was a predisposed condition there. But at any age, if you're in firefighting, even you guys that are in your 20s, okay, get a checkup now and then, get an annual checkup, let them take an EKG. You know, you go in there young, the doctor's not going to want to do it. Oh, you're a young guy. You tell them you're a firefighter. I say, listen, a couple of firefighters have had some problems in their 20s. I want to make sure I'm not going to be one of them. And go in there and get your annual physical. Let them put you on a monitor. And if they find something, get it fixed. Get it fixed. I mean, that's the time to do it when you're young. So we're still losing a certain amount of guys to heart attack and stroke and that kind of stuff. Just quickly speaking of that, Tom, I don't know if you've seen it, but they just changed some of the legislation for the public safety officer's benefit. A lot of guys never heard of the PSOB, and if you're listening out there, the public safety officer's benefit is a one-time payment from the federal government for any public safety officer. That could be a firefighter, a police officer, an EMT, a paramedic, as long as you're doing public service, volunteer career or otherwise. Currently, the benefit is somewhere around $330,000. to your family or your beneficiary, one-time payment, tax-free. They've changed some of the law. They have now included fire police. The title of fire policeman was never in the law, and there was a lot of lobbying going on between Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and I think two other states. I think New York was in there, where they have a lot of fire police. And so now the fire police are included, and they've made some other changes. Even internally, inside the office of the PSOB, which is Department of Justice Assistance, it's the Bureau of Justice Assistance within the Department of Justice. The group that reviewed the files when a guy got killed or a gal got killed, eventually it would leave that group and it would go to the general counsel, and that's where we get stuck with the lawyers. And if there's any lawyers listening tonight, sorry, but you guys were screwing it all up, okay? And you were holding shit up on families that desperately needed that money. So they did something good. Eric Holder, our attorney general, got in the middle of this, and he did some straightening out. And there's now law folks within the office, and they can all sit down together with the people, with our good friend, Hope Yankia. Hope is the director of the PSOB office. She's been nothing but spectacular over the last 8 or 10 years. And she works with us, you know, Tommy. We train all the teams. For you guys that don't know, the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation has something called the LAST program. It's the Local Assistance State Team. We have a LAST team in every state in the United States. Some states have two, depending on the size. And they will be on the ground within 6 hours of a line of duty. And their primary mission is to help get the paperwork done the right way the first time so the families can get the benefit. But they come with a host of stuff. They come with a ton of funeral protocols. They can bring an honor guard commander with them to teach the fire department how to stand and salute and all of that stuff. And that's a program that I've been privileged to be part of for the last 6 or 7 years, and it's working pretty well. I'm proud to tell you that. So we've done some lobbying, and they've made some changes to the PSOB, and things should be floating along. And this gal Hope from Washington has come to us or has Skyped in at our training sessions around the United States when we train those teams. And she, first thing she says is, we want to pay the benefit. It's not like, well, we're holding back or we might not get – that's an automatic line that's filled every year under the president's budget. They don't have to vote on it or anything. That money's always there for the PSOB. So they've made some good changes, and you know, the hope is we never have to call upon it. The hope is we don't have to file papers. But we have our last teams out there, and they're doing quite the job. So just so you guys understand what that is, if you never heard of it, talk to your fire chief. And at the very least, put a letter or a memo on everybody's file in the firehouse so who your beneficiary is, because lots of times something bad happens and then other people smell the money. You know, we're gonna talk about Charleston again, but when the Charleston Nine got killed in 2007, one guy had four previous girlfriends and had a baby with all of them, and the women, the mothers of those babies, they smelled the money. And there was a riot at the funeral. So turns out they didn't get any of it. The kids got it, as the way the law is written now. So,
in the way it probably should be.
Yeah. But, Tommy, you brought up before, you brought up West Texas. You said you wanted to chat about that. Let me give you back the floor and let us know what's on your mind here.
You know, of course, you know, speculation is always going to run wild anytime we have a line of duty death. But from what I'm seeing, Ron, that, you know, as the situation on the fire ground tended to get worse, the chief ordered all the personnel to evacuate the property. And I just thought it was kind of unusual today. I was up on Facebook earlier and looking at John Buckman's stuff. And John had posted about some of the second-guessing that's been going on with the media. And I guess what they're at least speculating or kind of harping on, whether that would have had a different outcome as to whether the West Texas Fire Department would have been career instead of that being an all-volunteer department.
Boy, that's an interesting angle. That's a very interesting angle for them to take.
Well, and it really pisses me off.
I gotta tell you, Tommy, right off the bat, that reporter didn't think it out himself. Somebody's stoking him up. Somebody stoked that guy up to ask that question. So, somebody out there in Fireland. He didn't come up with that himself. There's no doubt in my mind, and it's a shit thing to look at, frankly.
Yeah, and you know, and I think John made the point in some of the stuff that I was reading that he had put up that, you know what, these guys died in the line of duty. It doesn't matter whether they're career or volunteer, and let them rest in peace, for God's sake. And you know, I don't know whether that's the correct forum to be trying to stir up some of this shit.
Yeah, and you know, frankly, the fire chief come out about a week ago, and he gave a press conference and he gave his statement, and he said, you know, we knew what we had, We didn't go in there half-cocked. He says, all the outside units that were coming in, we sent them to the neighboring businesses in the house to start evacuating people. He says, and we were doing our best to do the same. He says, and then everything let go. He says, we knew we had something bad, but we didn't know how long it was going to take. So to his, it sounds to me that they were doing the right thing. And this is why, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, firefighters, whoever's listening to this, this is why we keep our guns holstered. Okay, right away, the bloggers, or as my good friend Tony Avila would say, the recliner snipers, they start shooting from the recliner. Yeah. I think Tony Castro, so that was part of his keynote this year at FDIC, the recliner snipers. Yeah, Avila gave me another one. But the recliner snipers, they start shooting from the back room, and it's like, you know what, keep your friggin' mouth shut. You know, let's wait, stop, okay, because as soon as a guy gets killed – and guys are looking at one snapshot or one photo on fireengineeringfirehouse.com, whichever one they're looking at, or on Facebook or wherever they're getting it. There's a whole commentary. They should have did this. They should have did that. Where was the ladder? Where was the line? How come it wasn't placed? They didn't vent the roof. They vented the roof. It's all, guys, it's bullshit. Okay, we're eating our young when we do that. Okay, keep your gun holstered. Tommy, as you know, and for the listening audience, at FDIC, the PIO came in with a film crew on Monday of the week. I was teaching Monday afternoon. Monday morning, there's a young lady out there. She's their PIO, and she brought a film crew. And she asked the fire engineering people to give her two people to talk about the Boston bombing and West Texas. So bingo. They look at me. I'm already wearing a suit, all right, and I'm a hazmat guy. So they give me. I take 15 minutes to prep. Okay, I brush up on the MSDSs for the chemicals. I go out there, and the first thing the guy says to me is, you know, what happened? Well, my answer was, I wasn't there, you know, and how do you think this happened? I said, well, I'll tell you how it happened. There was a fire and it blew up. I was giving them all stupid answers because they were asking me stupid questions. And I said, listen, after the third one, I said, we are learning in the fire service to keep our guns holstered, which is a very law enforcement thing to say at a fire conference. But that's what we're trying to do. We're keeping our guns holstered. We're not drawing. We're sitting back and we're waiting for an investigation because right now it's all speculation. You want to know about the chemicals in the building? I'll tell you all about the chemicals. And I gave him some background on anhydrous ammonia and ANFO and all the other stuff and the fertilizers. And we talked and chatted for about 15 minutes. And then, as you told me, Tom, the next day in your hotel room, you saw some of the kid who did the Boston thing. I ended up on the cutting room floor because I didn't give him any information.
You've been circumcised once again, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely, and it was painless, and they they ain't much left. You know what I'm saying?
But, yeah, okay.
Yeah, frankly, they wanted something juicy. They want a friggin' headline. I wasn't giving it to them, and I even used it. I said, "Listen, we're keeping our guns holstered. We have to be patient. We have 10 dead responders that we have to bury. We have to take care of the families. We have to take care of the firefighters and EMTs who are left behind." I said, "This is big time personal trauma for those people in West." I said, "That's the priority right now. Nothing else matters." I said,
yeah,
"You're going to have to."
There's a couple other thoughts, but just real quick, if you've got any comments or anything and want to join in on the conversation, please feel free to give us a call at 760-454-8852. That's 760-454-8852. You'll ring into the control board that Ron's got a hold of, and you can join us on the air. Ron, when I pulled the LODDs up on off of the USFA website, it only showed 5 for West Texas. And I'm wondering, I knew some of them were probably working for other agencies at the time, but I'm trying to figure out how all that gets sorted out.
Here's what I believe I read. It was 5 West Texas firefighters. A 6th guy was the guy from Dallas who happened to live in town. There was a captain from Dallas who got killed. He went over to give a hand. And then there were 4 EMTs from either the town of West Texas or a mutual aid town right next door that responded in. So that's the 10 responders altogether. That's from what I know.
Okay. I was kind of surprised the brother from Dallas didn't show up on the LODD list, even though, you know, he went in to help on his off-duty time.
Yeah, you know, and that gets sticky. And this is another issue with the PSOB guys. The law specifically says you have better be authorized to be at the scene if you get killed in the line of duty. Right now, I don't see on the surface, without passing judgment, it would appear that his family would not be eligible, and he was not killed necessarily in the line of duty as far as the federal law goes, because he wasn't authorized to be there. The only thing that could change that is if in their regulations at the Dallas Fire Department, and this very well could be, if it said that if you're off duty and you see something bad going on and you stop to help, you consider to be back on duty again and you'll get paid the 14 minutes that you helped save someone out of a burning car or whatever. If their regulations say that they should do that, then it's all square. If it doesn't, it could lend itself to problems. That's probably why he's not listed.
Mm.
They're treating him like a civilian because he just lived in town and went over to see what's going on, and unfortunately succumbed. My guess is he was there and he was helping. You know, I don't know what kind of helping he was doing, but guys, a captain in the city of Dallas, I'm sure he was helping, doing something. He wasn't standing there with his hands in his pockets. When it comes down to the letter of the law, Tommy, it's pretty specific. That's kind of the problem with that.
The other thing, the four medics that they lost were actually, I don't know if they were at the West Texas Firehouse, but they were somewhere in town doing the EMT refresher.
Yeah, they were going to school.
Yeah, right. If I remember correctly, they ended up going in. But I think the four of them were also serving as volunteers with the departments in the area as well as West.
They were volunteers and they were dispatched. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
When this thing came in, they said, hey, we need you guys to go over there. So somebody, they were dispatched. They were sent. That's the difference. And that's really kind of the shame of it all, where nine of the families will probably be PSOB eligible, and the guy from Dallas won't. That's the shame of that whole thing. But that's the way the law is written. There's not a lot we could do to change that now. But, again, the saving grace might be if, in fact, the Dallas Fire Department has some sort of rule on their book that says, if they were around and they got to help. I know Tommy gave out the call-in number. I'm also taking a look at the chat room. We've got a couple of guys on the chat room. If you have a question or you want to pop something in here on the chat room, guys, I can see it, and we'll bring it on the air if you want me to, whether it's a question or you want to make a comment on what we're talking about, whether it's West Texas or anything else. I guess we can go there, Tommy, to the Oklahoma tornadoes.
Thing I wanted to talk about with West.
Sure.
Go ahead. You know, there was some stink in the media, the guy they locked up.
Yes, yes.
Excuse me, I guess it was a medic. And it looked like he got arrested. ATF had picked him up for some bomb-making materials. But, you know, that was the last thing I heard on that, Ron, and I hadn't seen much else. I didn't know whether you had any info on that or not.
The only intel I have is that, yes, that all happened. However, it had nothing to do with the fire or anything. They ruled him out from the fire and the explosion. Yeah, from everything I've seen and heard, they ruled him out. But it was one of them stupid coincidences, frankly. And the last thing we need is – and to me, you see, that the press gets a hold of that. That's juice, man. Salivating to something like that. Hey, it was a volunteer fireman, blah, blah, blah. You know what? Enough. The press, sometimes they kill you. I mean, they just can kill you. So for you guys out there that are in a position to deal with the press, you know, embrace them, because if you don't, they'll eat you alive. You know, that's all I could tell you. But just be, you know, you got to be careful what you say. Can we go to Oklahoma now?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, certainly our thoughts and prayers are with the people in Oklahoma. They got in the town of Moore, they got their proverbial asses kicked for the third time in about 15 years. The tornado went through Moore, and those people are in bad shape out there. But as it would have it, Penwell Company, which is the parent of Fire Engineering, is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Bobby Halton's been on the scene down there doing interviews, talking to the fire chief and more and a whole bit. And if you guys get a chance, go on fireengineering.com, take a look at some of the interviews Bobby's done. And, you know, as being the editor-in-chief, he's usually pushing, moving things around to give us a great website and a great magazine. And there he was. He ends up the field reporter on this one, you know. So,
the same thing when they had the tornado in Joplin. Which is not that far off from Tulsa, and we did a great job of snagging one of their camera guys and just getting out in the field and talking to the guys that were working that. you know, you look at the destruction on that run. I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing. And, you know, a tornado hitting an elementary school and killing, you know, 23 kids. It's the kind of stuff I hope I never, ever, ever have to deal with.
Yeah, and you know it's funny, Tom, because we've talked about large disasters, whether it's that or it's a lot major fire. You know, you look at some of the big fires we've had, and we're gonna briefly talk about the Station nightclub again in a couple of minutes. But the some of the big fires, you know, the Beverly Hills Supper Club in Southgate, Kentucky, 165 people dead. The Coconut Grove, 495 people. You know, that's all kind of like, you read that and it's like history, and it's like, wow, that must have been an unbelievable fire, and it must have been incredible with all those bodies. But you know what, guys? Trust me when I tell you, you never want to be part of that. You never ever want to be part of that. It's horrendous. It's horrendous. You know, this tornado on top of all those people getting killed, the whole town is wiped out. I mean, they're off the map. There is no more. But those large death toll fires and stuff like that, you don't want to be part of that. That's something you'll carry it with you for the rest of your days. You don't want to be part of it. In Southgate, Kentucky, 1977, the Beverly Hills Supper Club fire took place, and there's a lot written on that, guys. And there was a cry to reopen that investigation a few years back, 2 or 3 years ago, on the anniversary. And there's some people who worked in the club that night who got out. They were young people, and now they're a lot older. And they believe there was some bad-looking guys hanging around, and they heard threats made. And before they know it, the whole joint's on fire, so that they think it was arson at this point.
Did you sit on Glenn's presentation on that a couple of years ago?
I did. Yep, and I bought two of the books that were written by two of the people who escaped the fire. And there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of the same opinion. Of course, the investigation was never reopened. The folks in Kentucky, some of them are still in political office, and they refused to open it. So there was a lot of bad stuff that happened. But they pulled 165 bodies out of that club over a 12 or 15 hour period. Okay, all of the volunteer firefighters from Southgate, when they got back to quarters after 3 days of fire, bodies and digging, hung up their coats and walked away and never came back.
Wow.
Just hung up their coats and never came back. The Southgate, Kentucky Fire Department basically just about ceased to exist. And
wow.
I had met a guy a few years ago at the National Fire Academy, a student of mine, who was a chief officer near Southgate, who was a volunteer that night. He was 18 years old. He was on one of the trucks. And he told us the story from firsthand. The fire chief went into deep alcoholism. The volunteer chief, he lost his family over it. Good for him. Later on, he came out of it years later and dried out, and he found another woman and had another family and moved away and that kind of stuff. But, I mean, this is bad, bad stuff. This stuff will stay with you and haunt you the rest of your life. You don't want to be part of it. Trust me when I tell you, you don't want to be part of it. So the folks out in Oklahoma, the whole country is thinking about you. We're all with you, and I know the fire guys – like law enforcement and everybody else are working their asses off just trying to keep whatever's left together. And I know there's a couple of moves on, Tommy. They're collecting some stuff other than there's food, clothes, and then on the fire side there's equipment and stuff. I'm just seeing little bits and pieces. I didn't see any central thing. I know they're asking people to support the Red Cross on this so they can get out there and help the folks.
Yeah, just some bad stuff. That you know, you remind me of you know, talking about some of those larger lost fires. And if I remember hearing the story right, the deal at the Coconut Grove, they had an extremely quick response time because they were out on a car fire.
Oh, they got the very fast
in the area. Yep. Before the call went out for the fire at the club, and. The numbers seem phenomenal and very surrealistic for, you know, this time. But, you know, we're still seeing some of that stuff. And, you know, you mentioned the Station nightclub fire, Ron. And, you know, this stuff still occurs on a fairly regular basis. And there's been a couple of those other large lost jobs overseas. or in different countries where that same pyrotechnic question comes in. And I know that's your ballywick, but I mean, if you're shooting off fireworks inside, to me, that just doesn't have a good outcome.
It can if the conditions are right. If we're you know, things are fireproof, and if the you see we're sprinklered. I mean, conditions are right. We do it all the time. Every arena in the United States that has a concert, they do an indoor pyro, and nothing happens. I mean, it can work. Okay, but the Station nightclub was a small old commercial building type thing, and then, you know, of course, there was foam on the walls for soundproofing and all that stuff. And so all the conditions were what I call the dominoes of death. The dominoes of death lined up, okay, and they all fell. And that's what happens with all of these. And now we just had the big one. What was it, Brazil, Tom, recently, or Argentina, where 230 people got killed in a nightclub? So, you know, these things make worldwide news, but, you know, it's that old thing. If we don't learn from the past, we're doomed to repeat it. While we're on the station, what I want to highly recommend to all of you is there's a book out now. The station files were sealed up until now. The Station nightclub was located in West Warwick, Rhode Island, on February 20, 2003. They had a fire, killed 100 people. And the dominoes of death lined up that night, and lined up way before that night with the owners, the band, the pyro guy, and everybody else involved. Well, the files, all the cases have been settled, and one of the attorneys, John Baralek, wrote a book called Killer Show. Guys, you need to read this book, Killer Show. Okay, I urge all fire chiefs to read it, and I urge them, after you're done, hand it to your fire marshals and your fire inspectors and let them read it. It'll make you do your job better. So good, one of the best accounts of a fire and impending investigation that I've ever seen. Just phenomenally done, and so good. I got in touch with John Baralek, and we're going to have him in the fall. We're going to have him to Connecticut to do a half-day seminar for fire marshals, fire chiefs, and fire inspectors here in Connecticut. That's how good this guy, just phenomenal job, just accounting of the fire and background on everybody who was there, and all the investigative stuff, the experts they hired, all the testing they did on the insulation and the foam inside the drummer's cove on the bandstand and the pyro stuff. Phenomenally done. Guys, it's called Killer Show, and the author's name is Baralek, Baralick. Highly recommended. John Baralek, Killer Show. So we're going to get him here, and we're going to have him speak live. And he also asked me about doing it in a larger venue, Tommy, and I hooked him up with Diane Rothschild at Fire Engineering, and he put in to do a two-hour a classroom version at FDIC for 2014.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so...
You know, it's the politics of fire are something that always... for as long as I've been doing this, I still find it kind of surprising of, you get a large-scale disaster like that and all the finger-pointing that goes on after some of that stuff. And the guy that was the fire marshal in Rhode Island at the time, Jesse Owens, I don't know whether you know him or not, Ron.
Not personally, no.
Okay, great guy, a truly dedicated firefighter. But, things get so convoluted when they start getting into litigation.
Oh, yeah.
That it's finally good to see somebody follow up on some of that stuff. And maybe we'll get answers to some of the questions we've had for years what's going on there.
Yeah, over the years, I've had college students of mine get in touch with them, and they said, sorry, with the files are sealed, we can't get you anything. But evidently, they're done. The total at the very end, of course, you know, we all know the end of the story, but 100 people dead. The settlement was $176 million from like 20 different culpable folks, and one guy did jail time of about 2 years. That's it. 100 people dead, and another 150 burned forever, you know, so... It's an amazing story, and it reads, this guy really had a talent, and he probably had some help, I'm thinking, although he's an attorney, he's a smart guy, but it almost reads like, and one of the commenters on the book says it reads like a John Grisham novel, and you can't, you're flipping pages so fast, and then near the end, you come to realize, holy shit, this really happened, this is a true story, and you can't believe the negligence and the non-caring and all of that shit, and how those, what I call the dominoes of death, lined up. Those people didn't have a chance that night. They didn't have a chance. From the moment of ignition, when the foam ignited, okay, the front door of the club was untenable 2 feet off the floor in a minute and a half.
Well, look at the video. I mean, my God.
Yeah. Right. The front door was untenable within a minute and a half. And unbelievable. Guys, you have to read the book. It just, you know, I don't sell the book. I don't make any money. It's just, I'm just saying, and I'm going to find a way to put it into my curriculum at the college when I teach next semester, because I want all my college students to read this book as well, because it's that important. It's really a book for the ages for what we do. And it'll certainly make your fire inspectors do a better job. All right, we're almost about halftime. We're a little past halftime. Let's hear from our good friends at Granger. Take time out, 30 seconds. How about now?
With over 900,000 products and 31 diverse product categories, Granger is basically an anything you need supply buffet. We've got everything from safety and electrical products to hardware, hand tools, and more. So you can efficiently purchase exactly what you need from one source, saving time and trouble. And just to be sure, the buffet thing was a metaphor. Please don't eat the stuff. Buy your supplies smarter. Just call quickgranger.com or stop by a branch today. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Now, Tommy, you do know when I went over to the Granger booth, I asked them where the buffet was, right?
Yeah.
I said, where's the buffet? The young guy standing there, he goes, the what?
I said,
where's the buffet? I says, I listen to your commercials. You talk about a buffet of equipment. Where's the buffet? I'm hungry. So he just looked at me like, all right, old guy, get out of here. You know,
yeah.
Figured out a senior moment.
It was good to visit with those guys, though. And,
absolutely. Granger, we thank you.
They're very personable folks, and definitely doing a good job of keeping this thing floating.
So, Tom, have you seen the? Did you watch the 30-minute documentary on Charleston that Dave Statter did?
I saw the new National Fallen Firefighter video. Is that what you're talking about?
That's the one. Yeah, Dave Statter produced that.
Okay, that's. In fact, I got it on the list here, the Charleston 9, The Ultimate Sacrifice.
Yeah, did you watch that?
I watched, and I just pulled it up right before we got on the air, so I haven't had a chance to completely watch the entire thing.
Very well done. As you know, Tommy, Dave Statt is part of our Memorial Weekend staff at Emmitsburg every year, and he does the video stuff, and he helps with some of the production and getting the media word out. He's a retired newsman. For you guys don't know, Dave Statter, if you guys go to Statter 911 website, Dave's a retired news reporter from the Washington, D.C. area, as is his wife. And she actually narrates it. Hillary's the narrator on it. And it's how they rebuilt the Charleston Fire Department under the direction of Chief Tommy Carr, who unfortunately passed away recently at age 59. But one of the battalion chiefs said, we did 15 years worth of rebuilding in five.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah, he says the only thing that's the same with this fire department is the name of the fire department. That's it. Everything else is changed and different. But it's guys, if you haven't seen, I know Billy Goldfeder sent it out under the secret list, and it's I would imagine if you go to the National Fallen Firefighters and Firehero.org, you could probably pick up a link. But it's about a half hour. I just got a chat from Ethan, one of our loyal listeners, Tom. He said he just watched it. He said it was very, very good. So for everybody listening out there, take 30 minutes and see how they rebuilt the Charleston Fire Department after the Charleston 9 got killed. Really nice job. Very well done. Real super, you know, good editing job and real professional. And everything's heartfelt. You could see from the guys. It's not a memorial. You know, there's nobody sitting there tearing up or anything. You know, it's been a couple of years already. But the guys really talk about how hard they worked. And how the lessons have been learned, and you know, for those of us who knew Tommy Carr, you know, he come out of Montgomery County, Maryland, great guy, and they owe it all to him, every guy they interviewed talked about Chief Carr, and what a great great guy, a great leader, and how he went there and embraced those guys in their grief, and pulled them up out of the foxhole and put them on top again, and they're doing great now. God bless them. I mean they. They're really they're the comeback kids. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I just you know, I saw going through some of the material when Tommy had passed away, and what a phenomenal job that was done down there. You know, I had sat through Gordon Ratley's presentation with the entire investigative team that had gone down there.
Right.
And, you know, I can think back of them talking about what had occurred and the lessons that were needed to be learned out of that. And the thing that struck me was I wasn't seeing anything new. It's the same stuff over and over again, and it's almost like the whole deja vu thing. And we got to get past this. I mean, we got to quit killing ourselves.
You know, one of the things I had heard, you know, from a couple of the guys that went down on the team, you know, is that it was one of the easiest consults they ever did because the fire department at that time complied with nothing. They didn't comply with. They weren't in line with any NFPA standards. They weren't in line with any OSHA thing. They just, you know, they sat around for the first day and said, they made a list of all the NFPAs and all the OSHA stuff and said, here, do this, you'll be fine.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, it sounds silly and it sounds quick, but that's kind of what they said. They said, you know, I spoke to Timmy Sendelbach not too far after they got back, and he said, Ron, it was kind of easy. He said they complied with nothing. We pulled out all the standards, all the regulations, all the rules, and said you need to do all of this, and you'll be a lot better off. And of course, you know, the eyes of the world were on Charleston, and you know, Ron Sarnicky, the director of Fallen Firefighters, he spent months there, and he made very good friends with the mayor. You know, and then when it's time to pick a chief, of course, I mean, Ronnie's a Maryland guy, you know, and Tommy
yep.
Carr's name came up, but not for anything else other than the fact that Tom Carr was the best guy for the job, who had the best temperament, leadership ability, personality, all that stuff. And he, you know, the mayor looked at Ron and said, "What do you think?" He says, "He's your guy." You know, so
yeah.
Sure enough, Tommy went there and he left a legacy in 5 short years. Here's a guy who had somewhat of a legacy, you know, in Montgomery County, Maryland. You know, I only heard good things about Tom for many, many years, and then in 5 years, he left this phenomenal national legacy and bringing the Charleston guys back up to where they needed to be. So the film is almost like it's a tribute to Tom Carr and the work he did. And he's on the film, and it's getting near the end, near his retirement. But he wanted to stay, but he couldn't physically, he couldn't go to work anymore. I mean, there were some days they said, even the firemen. So we used to see the chief. He used to be practically crawling into his office in the morning because he couldn't walk anymore. But we said if he could do it, we could do it, you know, and that kind of stuff. So hats off to Tommy Carr. May he rest in peace and just left a legacy. And just those are the kind of guys, Tom, that make me so fucking proud to be a fireman in this country. I got to tell you, it's just guys like that. If you watch that film, all of you out there, you watch that film. If you're not inspired. If you're not inspired, then you got ice water in your veins. You got ice water in your veins. You know, I'm around 36 years, and that shit inspires me still. You know, it's just phenomenal, phenomenal. So hats off to the guys in Charleston for really making the comeback. They are the comeback kids, no doubt about that.
You know, the whole series of videos that the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation has done presents such a great safety message. In fact, I've got most of them linked up to the department's website just so the guys can get up on there and with the ease of watching it without having to go digging around for them. But, man, what a phenomenal project that Ron Sarnicky's done with some of this stuff between Chicago, New York, and some of the other bigger cities.
Yeah, no, those all revolved around the Everyone Goes Home program. They're all part of Everyone Goes Home. And I teach that, as you know, I teach that program. It's just a 4-hour block. If you guys haven't seen Everyone Goes Home, Courage to Be Safe, then you're living under a rock with the Geico man. So tell your chief to get his head out of his ass and have somebody come. There are instructors all over the country. They do it for free. And they'll come to the firehouse and they'll do a 4-hour program, career, volunteer, or otherwise, and give you that Courage to Be Safe, Everyone Goes Home. Because and you can go to everyonegoeshome.com. And you can read some of the slides, and you can look at some of the videos yourself if you want. But it's nice to have somebody up in front of the room really preaching it and trying to knock it out of the park to convince the guys they need to do smart things like eat right, do a little exercise, buckle up, slow down, and that kind of shit. So, a lot of those videos, Tommy, came out of that program. I still use a couple of them. I use the some of the stuff. There's clips in there with Denny Compton and Brunicini and Tommy Brennan and Dave Daniels. And then I use a piece of the FDNY, Everyone Goes Home, you know, and just it's good stuff. It really is good stuff. Drives the message, drives the point. You know, Charlie Dickinson's on there. One of the best things I ever heard on any of that stuff was Charlie Dickinson. He's talking about, you know, line of duties. You know, when Charlie came out of California and he went to Pittsburgh, and he lost three firefighters in a house in Pittsburgh. That's what's known as the Briceland Street Fire, guys. If you look up famous fires, look up Briceland Street in Pittsburgh. We lost three firefighters in a 2.5-story frame house, and you'll say, how the hell did that happen? And you got to read the report. By the way, if your two-way portable radio that you carry into fires, if the first and last channel go to dispatch, that came from that fire. They realized that with a gloved hand, if you went all the way one way or all the way the other, it would be easy if you can call dispatch. That was a lesson learned from Bryson Street in Pittsburgh. But Charlie says on the film, folks, this ain't football. We can't rewind the tape. There's no do-over. I mean, just it's so simple. But he's right. He's right. We can't rewind the tape when something bad happens to one of our guys. You know, there's no second chances. And one of the guys on the FDNY, Everyone Goes Home, says, we are professional athletes. He says, at a moment's notice, he says, we go from 0 to 65 in 10 seconds. We have to be in top physical condition. He says, the guys who play football, they know when their game day is. We never know when our game day is going to be. I mean, it's just some good, profound stuff, and just people talking from the heart. So if you guys have
One of the other things that came out of that that same fire, and you know, after looking at the report, Ron, the you know, the entrance was at grade, and then of course it had a walkout basement on the Charlie side.
Right.
But you know, one of the things was a miscue was the, you know, what floor the guys were trapped on.
Right. Right.
And right. I think that was the other thing that came out of this was the way we label some of that stuff to kind of know where we're at. And that we're all speaking the same language on the fire ground.
The guys that pulled up to the front of the house thought they were on the first floor. And the guys that pulled up to the back of the house, which was a whole level below because the house was built on a hill, they thought they were on the first floor. Okay, so the guys in the front of the house would consider that the basement. Okay, the guys in the back of the house would consider the ground floor on the A side the second floor, because they thought they were on the first floor. And then, sure enough, three of them got lost somewhere on that lower level, and the rest is history. So these are the things we have to learn from, and we have to learn from this stuff, guys. It's not like we don't have a choice. We have to. So one of our guys gets killed doing something, we have to look at it, dissect it, learn the lessons, and then apply it and remember it. Okay, but again, when it first happens, keep your gun holstered. All right, we don't want to be making a mistake.
Did you see the kind of editorial piece that's up on Billy G's website on command staffing in Baltimore County?
I saw something about. Was that written by a retired deputy?
You know, I'm not sure who wrote it yet at this point, because I haven't delved into it deeply.
Retired deputy or district chief wrote a commentary. I think it was to the newspaper.
Yeah, about, and I'm not sure. I know Billy's got it up on Firefighter Close Calls, but, you know, it talks about the two actual fire ground line of duty deaths in Baltimore County in the last 2.5 years. The one that just occurred with Gene Kirchner, and then I think it's Mark Falkenhayn back in 2010 when he died. But they talk about the kind of the lack of command staffing in Baltimore County, and whether that's attributing to the fact that you've got guys that are actually dying on the fire ground, whether it be trapped or structural collapse or whatever, and how much that lack of a command staffing is attributing to that. There were, after the Falkenhayn line of duty deaths, there were two reports that came out. One was done in-house, and the other one obviously came out of NIOSH with the firefighter line of duty death investigation. And the editorial piece alluded to the fact that the in-house report had been edited down, and any mention of the problems of lack of command staffing were kind of taken out of the report. But the first set of recommendations in the NIOSH report pretty much hit the nail on the head. So I'm hoping that there's some lessons learned out of all this, that, you know, Baltimore County's a great department, but if there's something missing, you know, don't stick your head in the sand and try to avoid it. Let's get the problem fixed, especially if part of the problem includes killing firefighters on the fire ground.
Yeah, no doubt. If you read that, op-ed piece that deputy or that district chief wrote, he said at one time, you know, Baltimore County's huge.
Yeah.
And they had like six or seven battalion chiefs, you know, and now they're operating with three. And it could take a battalion chief 20 minutes or a half hour to get to the fire. In the meantime, who's running the fire?
Yeah.
You know, the first in company captain, he can give us preliminary and say, oh, we got a three-story frame where we got a row of condos, we got townhouses, but he's got to go to work.
You know, and the whole theory of, you know, passing command or going ahead and establishing and, you know, letting the second do comes out, works good on paper. But if you roll up and you got fire blowing out of the window, you know what? All that shit's going out the window with everything else.
It probably is, because that captain, he's got a two- or three-man team he's going to take into the building and try to make a difference, at least to slow the fire down or rescue somebody, throw a ladder, whatever they're going to be doing. And so who's running the fire? Nobody's running the fire. It's like, Jesus Christ, you know. So, yeah, you guys read that piece. I mean, and then, of course, now it's taking the chief 20 minutes to get there or 25 minutes to get there. Nobody's running the fire. And so no one has command, control, accountability. All that shit goes out. It becomes a dangerous operation. We're going backwards. We're going backwards. So, yeah, Tom, I'm glad you brought that up because that's kind of an important piece for the day. A couple other things I have written down here, just as kind of a side thing, and it's not really a side thing. I mean, it didn't happen here, but we need to learn a lesson. That building collapse in India, it took 1,100 people's lives. They killed 1,100 people in that building, in that factory.
That's crazy.
This guy went ahead. He built on soft land, and then he put two or three more floors on top of the building years later, and he killed 1,100 people, the owner. You know, so while we haven't had a lot of that in this country, you know, people renovate buildings. You know, the guys that jumped out the window on Black Sunday in the Bronx, that was an illegal renovation. The guys that got caught in a collapse on Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn about 15 years ago, that was an illegal renovation. A lot of our guys get caught in a lot of different places because of illegal renovations or substandard construction and all this other shit. We got so many other things to worry about, like lightweight construction, you know. And the thing is, the stuff we know about, we can kind of control. But the stuff we don't know about, it's difficult. So I guess if there's a lesson anywhere on this, to me, is get out and look at your district as much as you can, career, volunteer, or otherwise. Volunteers are getting together once a week for drill, whether it's a Monday night or a Sunday morning. Okay, get on the rigs, take a ride, go see what's going on. You'll see construction. They can't renovate a building without a dumpster and probably a backhoe sitting in the front yard. Stop and ask questions. If it's a Sunday, nobody's around, write the address down Monday morning. Somebody's got to call the building official, the fire marshal, say, hey, what's going on at 35 Broadway? You guys got to get out there and check your district because these people make renovations. They block access. They block egress. They take away a bearing wall. That's all the shit we're going to find out too late. It's too late. So I just, you know, that you watch the news, you know, and originally there were 400 people missing. Now it's 1,100 people dead in that collapse. It's wacky. It's absolutely
crazy.
Wacky. Yeah. I saw online also a New Jersey firefighter was hurt during training, and they said it was, quote, due to horseplay.
I saw that.
Not quite. Yeah, don't have the information on that, but
sounded like a head injury, if I remember reading it correctly.
Yeah, not sure who was doing what to who or where or when, but guys, there's no room for that on the fire ground or even the training ground because hurting a guy bad or killing a guy at training, it's a cardinal sin. Training is the most controlled thing we do. Training is the most control. Everything we go to is out of control, whether it's a wreck on the highway, a medical, fire, whatever. It's out. training is the only control thing we do. And if we hurt or kill a guy at training, it's 100 times worse. So when you're out there, save the horse and around for later. I don't know what they would do when I wasn't there. That's what the write-up said on online. But it says that the two guys were doing horseplay. We don't know much more than that. All right. So I guess we'll hear more as time goes on. We'll keep the guns holstered once again.
Hell yes.
That's that right now.
Not those,
Tommy,
never
I got
any grab assing going on at the training ground.
No, we save that for FDIC in the rooms at night.
Yeah.
What the hell? Hey, good enough for the Boy Scouts of America. It's good enough for me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Dude, I'm an old Eagle Scout. What the hell? You know? Listen, you know, as far as I'm concerned, listen, live and let live. Hey, listen, live and let live. I don't care. You know, I'm going to get off it for 1 second. Okay, I grew up in scouting until I got married, and I find myself, I'm back at it now the last 2 or 3 years, but not as a leader, but I get together with guys I was in scouts with 30, 40 years ago, and we go to camp, we go up camping like twice a year, and it's a big reunion, it's a lot of fun, and we see guys who I remember as young guys, and now they're grandfathers. It's kind of neat. I got lifelong friends from scouting, and great program, and I worked at summer camp a couple of summers when I was a youth, and all that stuff. But you know what? The Boy Scouts of America, they shoot themselves in the foot. They said, okay, it's all right. It's all right for kids who are openly gay to be Boy Scouts, but they can't be leaders. So we're going to take a kid, put him through the whole scouting program, hopefully get him to Eagle Scout, which is the highest rank and the highest accomplishment you can make. And then at 18, you officially become you go from a boy to, quote, a man. And then you got to throw the kid out of the troop because he can't be a leader because he's gay. So they're having a hard time there in Texas at Boy Scout headquarters right now. But it is what it is. You know what? Live and let live. That's what I say. None of that crap matters to me. We've had it. We went through it in the military. It's in the fire service. It's in the police. As far as I'm concerned, I could give a shit less what your preference is. You got to be able to drag a line, throw a ladder, and take a kid out of a window. That's all I care about. That's really all that matters to me. Nothing else really matters.
I'm with you on that, Ron.
We're all God's creatures. You know, we're all God. I don't care. It makes no difference to me as long as you can do the job, you know. And it's, you know, so everybody gets hung up on all this bullshit. And to me, it's just bullshit. It's just, you know, if you do your thing and you're smart about it, you're professional, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I got a story, Tom. I know it's going to make you chuckle. And guys, if you didn't see this, about 2 weeks ago, two well-meaning police officers in the city of New York got a call from a school. So they went to the school, and the kids were all screaming and yelling that some lady's cat was up in a tree. So one of the police officers, meaning well, he climbed up the tree, of course. As he got closer to the cat would go up higher. Now he finds himself 30 to 35 feet up, and he can't get down. So his partner called in and said, we need the fire department to assist us. My partner's up in a tree. Of course, the dispatcher on Police Plaza asked them to repeat it about 3 times because they weren't sure what they were hearing. Okay, so now they send an engine in a truck. They get off, and they're looking up at the cop, and they're just laying there hysterical laughing for about 5 minutes.
Oh, man,
having
a good
laugh. Okay, then they throw the ladder, okay, not near him. They throw the ladder where the cat is. They go up and get the cat, and they leave him there for a minute. And then they move the ladder over so he can climb down. So talk about your moments, you know, in the job. That's one of those memorable moments that you can laugh about. It's nice for us to laugh. And you know what? The cop, they said he was a great guy. He was laughing at himself. He thought it was funny, and he had to get rescued by the fireman and all that stuff. But that happened back in May 14th in the borough of Queens. Pretty funny, I think. I would love to have been there, you know.
You bring to mind my favorite cat in a tree story that occurred in the city of Bayonne, the garden spot of the Garden State. And apparently there was a cat up the tree. Woman calls the firehouse, said, hey, the cat's here. They're like, hey, we're sorry, we don't do cats. You're going to have to call animal control, blah, blah, blah. Well, they get a call back from City Hall. I guess the woman was fairly politically connected. And the boys ended up going up and pulling up to get the cat out of the tree. They ladder the tree. They go up. They get the cat. They bring the cat down. Hand it to the lady. Everybody's grateful. The firemen are great. They throw the ladder back on the engine, and they go returning the quarters. The lady puts the cat down, and it runs up the tree again. They stop, they get the ladder off, they ladder the tree again, go up, get the cat, bring it down, hand it to the lady, say, hold on to him this time, it's really important. Okay, get the ladder back on the rig, they go to pull out. They put the cat down, and the cat runs out, and the engine company runs the cat over.
I don't mean to laugh, you cat lovers out there, but all's well that ends well, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's horrible. That's
I know,
horrible.
But it's a cat story.
Shit happens. Shit happens, right? Oh, my God. We're getting ready to close. We got a couple of minutes. Just a couple of things. Tom and I are involved with the National Fire Academy Alumni Association. There's about 29,000 of us nationwide. And we just wanted to welcome aboard officially a couple of new board members. John Fugate from Texas took over Region 6. Mike West took over Region 8. Mike's from Colorado. And Dale Dietrich from Ohio took over Region 5. And again, our guy Mark Emery from out in Washington State, he was our instructor of the year through the ISFSI at FDIC. So just wanted to mention that and congratulate the guys. And if you guys go to our website, you're invited to do that at nfaalumni.org. You could see some current stuff on there. And there was some outstanding research awards given to some of the executive fire officer graduates for 2012. We listed them on our website recently, congratulating them. With that, you know what, let's give our folks from Granger one more plug before we say goodbye. Hang on for Granger. Here they come.
Running a facility, chances are managing inventory isn't your favorite part of the day. Stocking and tracking, ordering and organizing, all necessary evils eating up your time. That's why Granger's KeepStock services help you manage your inventory more efficiently, from basic labeling and scanning to secure dispensing machines, putting you in total control, often allowing you to buy less. Making things seem, well, not so evil anymore. Contact your Granger representative or visit Granger.com/KeepStock today. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
All righty. Thank you again,
is
Granger.
That a new commercial?
And, that was the we do three every show. That's the third one. That's been there.
I didn't remember that one. It's
yeah, you're still
old.
You're still concentrating on the one with the buffet in it. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
I am kind of hungry.
I guess in closing, before we go, we just again, tonight's show is dedicated for all those who are Memorial Day. For the people who are Memorial Day, we thank you again for your service and sacrifice and for keeping this country great here at home and overseas. We love you all. And for our line of duty, our recent line of duties, our thoughts and prayers are with the family, of course. And you know what, guys, the National Fallen Firefighters started a separate fund for the West Texas guys. Truth be told, they've collected about $23 million in the city of Boston for the bombing victims. And West Texas did about a quarter of a million, maybe not even a half a million. So they certainly took a back door, you know, with 10 responders getting killed. And it took a back seat. I didn't mean to say back door, back seat. So if you got some funds, you got your fire company, your association, your group, try to get a check out through the National Fallen Firefighters. You go to their website; it's all on there. So keep all those folks in West in your thoughts and prayers. Tommy, are we off next month, or was that in July? I don't remember.
I think we're off next month, and then we're back in July.
Yeah, I think we're off. We're not going to have a show in the month of June because. Our buddy Scott said, you don't have a show the month of June. That's pretty easy, huh?
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, the producer, they get some holidays and weekends, and they try to shuffle things around. So we're going to be off in June, but we're back in July. And if you guys are going to Firehouse Baltimore, I'll be down there for the weekend. I'm teaching on Saturday. Stop in, say hello. And basically, let me see. I got a good night from Ethan. Great show, guys. Might have to call in next time. Okay, Ethan's getting up his balls to give us a call, Tommy. We'll see.
Okay, you know, right, I got I could bring the chat site up, but I couldn't get logged into it this time. So, once again, I feel like roadkill on the information superhighway.
Yes, you are, my friend.
Yeah.
And before we hang up, Tom, I'll get in touch with you tomorrow or Wednesday about that other piece of business we need to do with our association. Okay, buddy.
All right, man.
All right, so. Boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, fellow firefighters, it was nice to have you up here on the back step with us. Until next time, be safe. Take care of yourselves. Basically, slow down, buckle up, eat right, eat light, stop for red, use your head. watch how you drive, arrive alive, hug your wife, hug your kids, hug them tight, and then say goodnight. So with that, goodnight all. Be safe. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Tommy, my friend, I will talk to you soon. Be well.
All right, brother. Stay safe, everybody.
Take care, guys. Good night.